because I headed out for my run yesterday, I noticed that the light was fading and it was just after 4 p.m. But as we're all quite aware, sunset today was 4:28 p.m. I usually run in the Harlem River Park that runs from the Willis Avenue Bridge at 145th down to the 3rd Avenue Bridge at 125th. And I headed out doing my shuffle step, just trying to get my body going. It's awkward, but that's how it goes for me. And on the way over, I stop under some scaffolding and do pull-ups. And then, well, I don't really do pull-ups because I'm not strong enough to do pull-ups, but I sort of jump up and then lower myself because I'm trying to like build up to pull-ups. And then I follow the path up the park and down the park and stop along the way and do some push-ups and sit-ups and then run back across the East River Parkway to my apartment. And the sky was so beautifully pink and the river really calm and reflective. And so I stopped at a couple points along the way and took pictures. Oddly, the picture I was taking was of the public storage building across the river, but it was just, for whatever reason, its reflection and lights were beautiful in the river. And it was on my way back up the river and to my apartment that I started reflecting on how much privilege I carry in my body and my social identity, and how the whole sort of system of patriarchy and white supremacy have taught me to walk around in the world unafraid. It's not a chosen thing. It's a given thing. It's like the way that structural sin, structural injustice is not a choice, but just a part of the formative realities within which we grow up in this society. And I bear that in my flesh and bones. Some people bear generational trauma, violence, and oppression, never having the experience, the privilege of walking through the world unafraid. Some people never have the experience of seeing the light fading and heading out for a run anyway. Some people don't have the experience of running at all. It's just not possible for a myriad of reasons. So as I came to the sermon and to this text from Isaiah, which is so deeply about centering those who have been crushed and disregarded, who suffer and who have every reason to be afraid, I paused. When I thought, have I ever had, even for a day, the experience of feeling desperate, powerless, afraid? What would help me even a little to imagine the experience of so many others who, because of gender or sexual identity or race and ethnic identity or disability or class or education or some intersection of these, feel every day as if they're the ones described as having desolate heritages, as the text puts it. And I realized as I reflected on that questioning of myself that my most profound experiences of powerlessness, of fear and desperation, come from my childhood out west in the mountains, where I'm small and seemingly the world is indifferent to me, rather than set up in every way to my advantage. I remembered one time when my dad wanted to take me fishing in one of his favorite childhood spots in the Bighorn Mountains of Wyoming, near the ranch he grew up on. It's called Trapper Creek. And my dad would regale me with stories of hiking down into Trapper Creek Canyon with just his rod, because they kept a frying pan under some rocks to cook the fish that they caught in the crystal clear stream. And they didn't bring any water because they would just dip their hands into the free-flowing water and drink. So we parked our old orange International Scout up on the ridge and we hiked down this trail that my dad thought led to his old spot. And after about an hour, we came to a cliff edge that dropped about 20 feet into the canyon bottom. So close, but so far away. And Wyoming is a desert, as you know, if you've been there. And it was a hot August day, but we didn't bring any water because we were expecting, of course, to drink with our hands once we got down to this beautiful creek. So my dad, irritated, led us back up the ravine and then down another trail, thinking for sure this was the one, only to find ourselves at the top of another cliff. A few more times with the same outcome left my dad in a fury and my 12-year-old self just exhausted and thirsty. We struggled back toward the scout in defeat, and as I remember it, I was so thirsty I dropped down to cup some water out of cow footprints that we found along the way that had some leftover rainwater in them. It feels kind of repulsive to me in retrospect, but at the time I just felt gratitude for some water to slack my parched mouth and throat. Somehow I don't think it's possible to understand this text from Isaiah and the God Isaiah shows us, the God we come to know through Mary in the season of Advent, outside of some experience of desperation, of fear, of struggle. The Israelites had suffered a great disruption and abasement as a result of their defeat in the Babylon attacks. And now they were living as exiles, as strangers in a strange land and longing for their home. They felt as if their God had abandoned them, that they were destined to suffer and die without comfort, without a place to claim and live the dignity and joy of their full humanity. To this people, the voice scholars call Second Isaiah speaks with tenderness, with promise, with hope, with power. God to this pastoral Isaiah is like the God Mary knows, one who says to the lowly, "Do not be afraid," and to the suffering, "I have compassion for you." The metaphorical world of the wilderness is so powerful in Scripture, in the story of the exile, and in the story of Jesus too. And it's important to say clearly, the wilderness is not God-forsaken. Isaiah says in no uncertain terms, "I am with you in your suffering. I bring springs of water. I bring food along the way." Perhaps most profound, Second Isaiah draws upon the image of God as a mother to describe the tenacity of God's desire for us and commitment to be with us, working for our good, even when things seem desperate, even when things seem at their worst. To this people still in exile, still thirsty and hungry and suffering, and on their worst days, sure of the fact that God had abandoned them, God says, Isaiah says, speaking for God, "Can a woman forget her nursing child or show no compassion for the child of her womb? Even these may forget, yet I will not forget you." We as congregants embody many identities, many stories, and great complexity. We hold privilege and oppression differently given our stories and our situation. And each of us out of our situatedness has experienced the intense hardship of this past year and this present moment in it. It makes hope and the kind of unfettered joy Isaiah speaks of a challenge to hold on to. Sometimes, in fact, it feels impossible. Really, God? Sing for joy feels pretty much like I still got desolate heritages to deal with. Many in my neighborhood feel that way as I see them lined up around the corner for food, camped out on underpasses in the park, gathered in worried conversations on the stoop. Even the word stoop, in fact, a place of community and healing, nonetheless harkens back to harm. It comes from the Dutch language of New York's earliest colonial settlers who took this land from the Lenape and built a community that recalled the Harlem they'd left behind in their homeland. So in the midst of all this complexity of our wounds and sufferings and our aching desire to be healed, God, the nursing mother, comes to us in the season of Advent, a God who desires nourishment and growth and fullness of life for you. You may feel as lost and disoriented as I was that day at Trapper Creek, or feel some other way that feels hard, that feels like the people of Israel crushed, hurting, in exile. Hope may some days feel like the poet No Land says, stupid, idiotic, impractical, a little bit out of touch, radical hope. And we wait in that radical hope. For to you today, as in the days of old, God says, I will not forget you. We share the sermon here at St. Lydia's. We'll spend just a few moments in silent reflection, and then when you hear the sound of the bell, you're invited to share your stories and experiences sparked by the scripture text and by my reflections. We don't share opinions or engage in crosstalk, but simply share stories as Jesus did so that we come to know each other as beloved community more deeply. We begin in silence.